Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. So he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another edition of the BehindTheSteelCurtain.com flagship podcast. The standard is the standard. I'm Jeff Hartman, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. And with me, as always, is Chris Carter. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing great, man. I'm ready to unleash hell here in June.
Absolutely. It's kind of depressing when you hear that line. I hear that we're like unleashing hell in December. And you're like, oh, gosh, yes, I'm ready for Steeler football. And then you realize it's in middle of June and you have a long way to go. We're going to get to that, but first, let's talk about our sponsors. As always, we're sponsored by Frank Walker Law, the top criminal defense firm to call in Western Pennsylvania or Northern West Virginia, and home to one of the nation's top 100 ranked trial attorneys. Call Frank Walker Law. We'll hear more from him later. And also a new sponsor for the shows, all of our podcasts actually, in Centerfield Smoke. Ladies and gentlemen, centerfieldsmoke.com is your place for all Pittsburgh sports t-shirts. This isn't the stuff that you're going to find at the NFL shop, but it's great local products. Definitely check them out. They're sponsoring all our podcasts, and we will have a link on the site here shortly when this podcast is posted on Friday morning. So let's get right into the thick of things, Chris. Not a ton of stuff to talk about in terms of the Pittsburgh Steelers, but there is some news. Wednesday night, the NFL Network, they're doing their top 100 show to keep the NFL buzz going. And a Pittsburgh Steelers found themselves on the show when Ben Roethlisberger was ranked 21st on the list. Now, I will say that last year he was 26th, so he improved 5 spots. Real quick, what was your first initial reaction when hearing that Ben Roethlisberger was ranked 21st?
It was kind of meh. You know, I figured that they would not put him in the top 20, but I was kind of surprised because NFL Network and a lot of the rating systems, that no one really ever ranks Ben Roethlisberger up very high. And for whatever reason it is, because he's not your typical quarterback, he doesn't, you know, put up insane numbers like Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, you know, when they've had their super seasons. You know, he doesn't do all that. And, you know, you've seen him just before. Like, there's been some years where he hasn't been on the list or he's been like 60 or 50. And, you know, it's just, to me, like, I feel like the list is kind of, over the years, it's kind of just, there's certain times I think it hits on the knot, it hits something on the head. You think, oh, this is an accurate ranking for a player. But there's a lot of times that players are just like, I don't know. Cousins was ranked well above, like, players like Cameron Hayward. And I'm just like, you're crazy if you think that Kirk Cousins is to the Redskins what Cameron Hayward is to the Steelers or his opponents. And Ben Roethlisberger has been one of those guys for years. So I was kind of surprised that I didn't think that they would rank him that high when I saw that he was still on the board when it came to the 20s. But you know, it was, you know, 21, that makes sense because, you know, they're gonna keep him outside the top 20. And really, I mean, he's one of the best players in football. He runs one of the best offenses in the NFL right now, and you can see the night and day for how his team works. But I'm kind of over how they rank some things. I think it's interesting to talk about and listen to what the players think. But yeah, what was your take when you heard that?
To be honest with you, I saw that, and my first initial reaction was, you're telling me there's 20 players in the NFL better than Ben Roethlisberger? I'm sorry, I couldn't list 20 players better than him. And this is the tough part of having a list of not the top 10 quarterbacks or the top 10 linebackers. This is the issue with you have the top 100 players. And so whoever's voting, which this is voted on by the players, and let's be mindful that most players definitely probably have an angst or an axe to grind against the Steelers because of their success. And a lot of people have an axe to grind with Ben Roethlisberger, whether it's the way that he plays the game, the frustration that he brings to defenses, or whether it's his off-the-field issues that are well-documented. But still, I just – 21. Now, maybe this year it was – this is what I don't get, really, is that you think, okay, well, maybe it's because he missed some time. You know, his statistics weren't crazy this year. They are comparable to maybe in the past. But last year he was 26, and he played in more games. And he moved up five spots. I don't know. It something just bothers me about this list. And the NFL Network is genius for doing this. Absolutely genius. Because what are we talking about? There's nothing else to talk about. So we're talking about this dumb list that is really, it could be the most opinionated list ever. And yet people like us are talking about it on podcasts and on websites and on TV shows. And they're having reaction pieces and all this stuff. And you're like, man, this really has nothing to do with real life. It's just totally a total opinion. But nonetheless, Ben Roethlisberger is 21st. I'm anxious to see the quarterbacks they have ranked ahead of him. I have not looked at the list yet. I'll be honest here. I haven't looked at the actual top 100. I know that the Steelers have had Cameron Hayward. They've had Le'Veon Bell. Ben Roethlisberger, I believe, are the only three players that they've had listed. Correct, Chris?
Yeah.
So my guess is Antonio Brown is going to be the only other Pittsburgh Steeler to be ranked. So I'm looking at this list and I'm like, okay, well, what quarterbacks are they going to put above Ben Roethlisberger? For instance, if you have the list in front of you, I'll say a name. Do you have a list ready?
I'm actually pulling it up right now. I was trying to view it via NFL.com, but they always make everything difficult, so I'm trying to look at it from a different one.
Okay, well, when you find it, I'm going to say a name, and we're going to see if this player is on the list. I'm going to look while you are, but I'm looking at them. Just thinking about quarterbacks, and you think about the same quarterbacks as well. Certain quarterbacks, I think like Russell Wilson, okay? Like Russell Wilson. Is
he's
going to
be above it.
Ranked? And I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I think that's absolutely ridiculous that
he
would be above.
He was ranked,
I mean,
he was ranked one spot ahead of him last year, and when you take into account that I think that when they're gonna look at the fact that Russell Wilson and the Seahawks beat Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers in the head-to-head matchup this year, and they're gonna continue to put him above him for that. But like Russell Wilson, I think him winning a Super Bowl and then going to another Super Bowl in consecutive years, and while you know, the defense played a big part in that, he did show up in big moments for the Seahawks. I think that has put up his height meter, at least among the other players in the NFL. And, I mean, I think that Russell Wilson's a very good quarterback. I don't think he's in the caliber of Ben Roethlisberger, but I certainly think he's very talented. But I can tell you right now, he's definitely ahead. And I'm looking through this list right now because I just pulled it up. He definitely hasn't been listed, which means he will be listed in the top 20 players in the NFL.
Absolutely. So I have the list in front of me as well. So far, the quarterbacks that have been announced, Ben Roethlisberger is the highest so far at 21. You have Drew Brees at 30. Then you have Andy Dalton at 35. And then you have Philip Rivers and Eli Manning, 46 and 47. And Blake Bortles made the list. How the hell did Blake Bortles make the list? He's 56.
Blake Bortles made the list, man.
He made it at 56. That is just totally devaluing these spots if I keep going down this list. Alex Smith made the list at 81. That's comical. Well, that guy does nothing. Kirk Cousins made the list. Andrew Luck, 92. I mean, Andrew Luck is better than every guy that – I mean, this is so ridiculous. But and then Derek Carr was the 100th person.
I think you missed one. Andy Dalton's number 35. They're saying Andy Dalton is the 35th best player in the league. Like, come on. You're joking. It's Andy effing Dalton. The Red Ryder BBC gun. Oh my gosh! I mean, like this guy hasn't won a playoff game. He folds under pressure. Like literally, the stigma has been if you play the Bengals in prime time with Andy Dalton at quarterback, they're going to get spanked because he's going to fold. And they do that just that. And, yes, this year the playoff loss wasn't his fault because he was hurt, but it's because he threw an interception to Stephon Tuitt, and then he tried to tackle him and broke his thumb for the rest of the season. And that's just – it's Andy Dalton, man. Like, come on now. Like, how is he 30 – how is he 35? I'm looking let's look under him. Let's see what players – excuse me, get listed under him. First of all, Le'Veon Bell, which I kind of get because he had a hurt-up year. But you got players like Fletcher Cox for the Eagles. Devontae Freeman, though he was this is his first year blowing up, I think I'd rank him above Andy Dalton. Players like Muhammad Wilkerson, who changed the line of scrimmage. Greg Olsen, a team leader for the Panthers. Marshall Yanda, Dez Bryant, Chris Harris Jr., Levante David, Eric Berry, Clay Matthews, Navarro Bowman, Demaryius Thomas, Gerald McCoy. I could keep going, Jeff, but these are Earl Thomas is below him. Earl effing Thomas. But these are the players that they're – and that's what I'm just like, there's some weird stigmatism. Like, there's something there's some weird, like, power rankings that they do in these lists, and there's some things I just don't understand. What used to validate this list more for me was like when you at least heard rebuttals from players. Like when Ben was ranked at 51 year, Haloti Ngata was on the list. Was interviewed about him, and he said, "No, I have to play that guy two times every year, and he's way too good to be ranked at 50. That's insulting. He causes problems for us every game that we play him, and I cannot in good knowledge, put him at that ranking. He has to be much higher." And that was when I was like, "Oh, okay, that made it kind of cool for me, because at least like there's some arguing from the players about other players. Arguing about yourself, then you get into pride issues, and then it's like, well, you're kind of speaking from a biased standpoint. But when you're talking about players from other teams, like players you had to face or players you study, that intrigues me more, because this isn't Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless yelling at each other over a table. It's players that have had to line up against them and said, well, he did this to me or I did this to him, and this is why I think that this person is more valuable to their team than this person. So, it's that's what makes the list fun for me whenever I do watch these things, but there's just certain rankings. I'm just like, come on, it makes no sense.
Yeah, so let's talk about – let's just focus on quarterbacks, because, like, I'm looking at the list and I see that they have Allen Robinson for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who I thought had a great season. But he's above Cam Chancellor, Doug Martin, Aqib Talib, and they won a Super Bowl for the Denver Broncos. I mean, I just don't understand everything about this list. But let's talk about quarterbacks that are going to be ranked higher than Ben Roethlisberger. Before I go any further, you follow this a little bit closer than I do. Players that retire, in other words, Peyton Manning, is he going to be on this list, or is he not eligible to be on the list because he retired?
Once you retire, you're done. You're taken off the list.
Okay, good. So, we already talked about Russell Wilson. He's going to be above Ben Roethlisberger, and I definitely don't agree with that. Aaron Rodgers is going to be above him. Tom Brady will be above him. Who else am I missing that's going to be ranked above Ben Roethlisberger on this list?
Actually, at this point, I think that's it. Drew Brees and Peyton Manning were the two other guys that used to be above Ben Roethlisberger. But, Teddy Bridgewater is not going to be on this list. When you're looking at Tom Brady, he's definitely going to be in the top 10. Russell Wilson, we talked about. And again, this is also very much – I think a lot of weight gets put into what has recently happened. Like, what have you done for me lately? Aaron Rodgers, he's always going to get that respect for the credentials that he's earned. And then, so you said Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Russell Wilson. And honestly, I can't think of another one that would be that they would put above Ben.
Okay, so in that aspect, he's actually improving, which is good. It's good. It's not where I think he should be. I think most Steelers fans would agree with that.
You know what? I just thought of something. What if they put Carson Palmer above him?
You know they probably are. He's going to make a list. He had a heck of a year, but they are.
They did have
to. Unbelievable. Now I'm pissed off again. I mean,
Yep.
this is ridiculous. Okay. Let's shift gears a little bit. We'll stop talking about the list. We'll react a little bit more next week when it comes out as who is the next 10, so to speak, of players. But you know, this includes this is the dead season that we always experience every summer where there's not a lot of news. But you know what? There's still stuff to talk about with the Pittsburgh Steelers. It might not be breaking news. It might not be, you know, really, really important in terms of all this stuff. But ultimately, I think that what we're looking at here is you did a really good piece as a two-part film room series on Ben Roethlisberger and going for two. That was talked about a lot recently, the two-point conversion. The Steelers went for it more than anyone else. They also were successful more than anyone else in NFL history. When you did your research for this, first tell about the articles a little bit, and then tell us what you kind of found, how they're successful, and how maybe you think they should take an approach to 2016 in terms of, okay, we're going for it more or we're going for it less. Go ahead and tell us about it.
So, yeah, everyone, because Ben Roethlisberger came out and said, I want to go for two-point conversions every time. He's very confident in his offense and in himself. And saying that, listen, we can go out here and we can convert two-point conversions on the regular. And the Steelers, they're coming off a season where they went for – I think this is the most that's ever been done. I wasn't able to find a list of who's tried and done the most in a season, you know, because it's just something that no one ever really thought about before, because two-point conversions happened like, you know, once in a blue moon. But now with this new rule change that pushed the extra point back to the 15-yard line, teams have a bigger incentive to go for two. And – the Steelers really went after that. They tried it 11 times this year and converted 8 times. That was the most attempted, and they had the highest success rate of any team that tried it more than once in 2015. And it was an interesting staple to add to the Steelers' mix of style, because they could come out and instead of going up 7, they're going up 8, and that puts the pressure on you, because now you're thinking, oh, crap, now if I just kick this extra point, I'm still down a point. I don't have the leader. It's not tied, and, you know, we still have to work to score again. And little points like that, like, you know, after if you say the Steelers score 3 touchdowns and they get 3 two-point conversions, they're up a field goal if you're matching them touchdown for touchdowns but going every extra point. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to look at why they were successful a lot last season and what they did. And if you look over, it's a two-part series because we have to do 3 gifts per article. It's a two-part series that took 6 of their 8 conversions. And when I looked at these conversions, what I saw on pretty much every one was that they spread you out. They make you think that they could go anywhere. They usually put Antonio Brown on the field. Martavis Bryant is on the field. If he's not, then like Marcus Wheaton or Darius Hayward Bay's on the field. They'll have one tight end, maybe two, and they seem to always have at least one running back and sidecar. And what they do with that is you have to account for either the handoff, which they rarely did this season. You have to account for the handoff. You have to account for the fade pattern to a tall receiver. You have to account for quick slants, for quick moves in and out, you know, a zig route that might get open. You have to account for just covering the receivers for a good amount of time because the Steelers have a good offensive line. You have to account for tight ends going up for big passes. And you also just have to account for a trick play, you know, or just you being overly aggressive. In the first article, if you go look at stuff, you can go Google Steelers two-point conversions or Ben Roethlisberger owns two-point conversions. You know, and you'll see, like, on the first issue that we did, we focused specifically on wide receivers and how what they would do. They could spread the wide receivers out. The defense has to then put their defensive backs on the field, which opens up the middle of the field for a running attempt if they wanted to. And, you know, with Le'Veon Bell, that's another player that I'm comfortable giving it to him and let him try to get 2 yards. But most of the time, Ben Roethlisberger, he can read what you're in, if you're in zone, if you're in man, what advantages your receiver has over the player on the other side of the ball. And, you know, he lets you do 1 or 2 moves and he figures it out and he hits it. And more often than 8 of 11 times, he nailed it. One of the only times that really, that really got stopped was when Richard Sherman, he basically just blanketed Antonio Brown the whole play and Ben had to throw it up because the pressure broke down on him. But he either does a quick pass or they have like a sort of set up spot play. And one thing that the Steelers did, so on top of using the wide receivers, they weren't afraid to use anybody. Like there's one time, against the 49ers. They set it up. They spread it out. Ben Roethlisberger catches it from the shotgun, rolls to his left. The entire defense rolled with him away from the right side of the field on the strong side, the right side. Heath Miller's sitting there. He's setting up to block a pass rusher. He gets his hands on him. The pass rusher tries a swing move. He lets the pass rusher go. So the pass rusher thinks, I have a free man at the quarterback. But because the entire defense has shifted to the left, Heath Miller's standing in the end zone wide open for an easy two-point conversion. It's stuff like that. It's like, how can you, that kind of stuff, it frustrates defenses because they can't just sit in a specific spot and be like, okay, they can only beat us this way or they can only beat us that way. They have to account for 10 different things, and that's what's so dangerous about it, and that's what can really frustrate defenses in short yards. And this thing, it'll apply also to goal line stands because, you know, they're going to operate very similarly in how they do with two-point conversions to how they operate, you know, when they're inside the five and, you know, of the red zone and they're trying to put a touchdown on the board. So, to me, I love it. Go look up those articles, but there's stuff like that with Heath Miller. There's cutoff routes with Jesse James. They had him. He started to go to the back of the end zone, and his man was a defensive back. He was playing back because he was waiting for Ben to throw him a fade pattern because Jesse James had like 3 inches on him, so he's like, I'm going to have to get ready for a jump ball. Jesse James didn't have to go for a jump ball. He just stopped, turned around, Ben hit him, and that was a two-play conversion. It's that kind of stuff. There's so many factors on this team, on this offense, that you have to account for every one of them, and even a running back. One of my favorite ones to watch was they had Antonio Brown was on the split end to the left side. The rest they had three guys to the they had three weapons to the right side, like Wheaton, Miller, and Darius Heyward-Bey, and they had Franklin or Fitzgerald Toussaint to Ben Roethlisberger's left in the shotgun. When the play snapped, Antonio Brown dragged across the right side of the field. He went across the line of scrimmage, and he's coming with him. Now, his corner comes with him, and it was the Browns. They were in cover one. So they had a middle linebacker in the zone and a safety in the zone. Both those guys in the zone, they saw Antonio Brown coming on the drag. They bumped down. They went right to Brown. Well, on the back end of Brown's drag, a delayed circle pattern from Fitzgerald Toussaint broke out. He went to the left, and then he cut into the right, and he had single coverage against an outside linebacker that was specifically a pass rusher, so he couldn't catch a fast little scat back, and it was an easy two-point conversion for Ben Roethlisberger. So it's stuff like that. You have to account for the running back, for the wide receiver's quick moves or for the fade moves, or, you know, because Antonio Brown, he doesn't just beat you with one or two moves. He beats you so many different ways. When you have to account for all that, it makes you want to throw your hands in the air because you can't stop it. So that's what we were talking about with the two-point conversion. I don't know about you, Jeff, but I like it, and I want to be aggressive. I love the way Mike Tomlin gets aggressive when he has, because he knows he has Ben Roethlisberger, and I want to see more of that in 2016.
Well, and he was confident even with Landry Jones. When Landry Jones was in there, he went for 2 points as well. I think a couple of those
that's a good point.
Failed attempts were with Landry Jones, a quarterback, and keep that in mind. That just shows you how confident Mike Tomlin is in his personnel, and why wouldn't you? I mean, when you only have 3 or 4 yards to go, you're going to be smart about it. And Ben Roethlisberger said it himself. He said, look, I look at it this way. If you fail on the first one and get the second one, there's your 14 points, so you're back to square one. And if you can capitalize on both, now you've got that odd situation where the other team, if they're just going to kick extra points, well, now they're trying to get back into the game. Let's look ahead to 2016. Two questions for you, since you just reviewed all that stuff. Number one, will the absence of Martavis Bryant impact the decisions made in this scenario? And two, would you be aggressive enough to say that you would go for it every single touchdown unless it would be a situation where, say, there only is a touchdown and then an extra point wins the game? And you obviously wouldn't need to go for two because an extra point would win the game. Those two questions, is Brian's absence going to deter them from possibly going for it as much? And two, would you go for it every single time unless other factors dictate it doesn't need to be done?
No, I don't think – well, to answer your first question, no, I don't think Brian at all. Because when I looked through all 8 of those conversions, Brian was not part of any of them. That's the funny part. And you'd think that he would be because he's the tall receiver. He goes up and gets it. He had that insane catch against the Bengals for a touchdown in the playoffs, and he had so many great leaping catches throughout the year. But and you think that he would be that guy in the red zone, like Randy Moss, old school, just toss it up to him and let him go get it. No, the Steelers love to throw those quick slants or to throw those quick routes that are tough to cover to let their tight end go get it or to, you know, to trick you out and throw it somewhere where you just got faked out of your shoes. It's not going to hurt them at all. I don't think they're at all going to hold back. And yes, this is my one sticker on this, or this is like my one, you know, add-on or consideration that I would throw into your second question about I think they should go for every time. I think they should if Ben Roethlisberger is healthy and in the game and if he's feeling it. You know, if he's having a rough game, like if he's playing like he did against the Bengals the first game this year and he's come back from injury, no. Then you got to realize what you're dealing with. You got to take your extra point unless he really feels it. Like he's like saying, "Coach, give me the ball." You know, then take your extra point. Don't throw unnecessary risks out there. But if Ben Roethlisberger, like in the first game of the season, we're against Washington and we're playing them, and Ben Roethlisberger hasn't gotten touched or injured at all, I'm going for two each and every time until you prove to me that you can stop me when I go for two. And I think that's just going to add to the pressure it's going to add to the pressure of the other team, and it's going to boost the confidence of the Steelers. I mean, that kind of stuff, that does get in your head if you're an opponent. Like, man, why can't we stop? Not only can we not stop these guys from scoring touchdowns, they're scoring again on us. And it's like that kind of stuff, that wears on you. And then once you hit one or two two-point conversions, you can afford to miss one after that because you're now up 16 and the opponent might have six or seven. And it's like, oh man, if we miss the next one, you know, we don't go up 24. We don't have 24 points. We have 23 points, but that's 23 is still a lot better than 21. So I'm going for it each time. And I don't think that the missing Martavis Bryant, especially with the addition of Za'Darius Green, because he is a tall target and he can win those jump balls, I think he's going to take the place of what we thought Martavis Bryant would be in those situations, and that Ben Roethlisberger's not going to think twice about it. He's going to be like, listen, I got Antonio Brown, I got Marcus Wheaton, I got Jesse Davis, Za'Darius Green, and don't forget, he's got Le'Veon Bell back. And Le'Veon Bell, not just to run the ball, he's a great receiving back. If you remember, against the Ravens back in midseason two years ago, they were, you know, the Steelers were lining up against them. Oh, actually, I'm sorry, this was against the Texans, I believe, but they lined up Le'Veon Bell in the slot as a wide receiver, and he just did one move, and the defensive back was shook up, and then he caught a touchdown. Think about that. You could add him to the mix. He can sit there behind with Ben Roethlisberger in the shotgun, be motioned out, and act as a receiver. That's what I'm saying. There's way too many threats in this offense to ignore. So go for two each time. I'm cool with it.
Absolutely. It kind of reminds me of the movie Friday Night Lights. When, if you remember the movie, not the TV show, Dallas Carter, they never punted the football. They always went for two. They were really super arrogant about it, too. Hey, if you got it, flaunt it. That's always been my theory. So I think the Steelers have the personnel to do it. I say go ahead and do it. You know, just let them go. And, you know, an article I wrote, which was covered by a couple other media sources as well, was how the Steelers are still toying with the thought of putting two running backs on the field, D'Angelo Williams and Le'Veon Bell. Think about that from a two-point conversion standpoint. You could keep them both in the backfield on different options. You could motion Bell out into the flat. I mean, very versatile offense. This is a very versatile offense and one that can be very, very dynamic coming up in 2016. I think that has all of us really excited. And something that we're really excited about is Frank Walker. Let's hear a little bit from our sponsor.
Smart or stupid? Those strobing lights in your rear view? That flashlight shining in your face?
License, registration, and insurance, please.
The little adventure you're about to have with this guy?
I'll need you to step out of the vehicle, please.
Okay, so you've done something stupid. Fix it with a smart move.
For DUI or criminal defense, call Frank Walker of frankwalkerlaw.com. He knows his way around a courtroom. 412-532-6805. 412-532-6805 or frankwalkerlaw.com.
That's Frank Walker Law. Make sure if you are in any type of trouble, and remember, we hope you're not, but if you are, make sure you contact Frank Walker. All that information will be on our website, behindthesteelcurtain.com, tomorrow. And don't forget about our other sponsor, Centerfield Smoke, centerfieldsmoke.com. They have some great Pittsburgh Steelers T-shirts. I'm looking at them right now. They've got one of my favorites, and it's just because the line always brings a smile to my face, is it says simply, "They shot me in Denver." And that's something I was like, from back in 2005 when Joey Porter, obviously he had
He got shot in the butt in Denver. He went to Colorado State. He's going back, kind of going back to tracing his origins. And he just yelled at them, "They shot me in Denver." And that's such a great line. And they turned it into a shirt, which you can buy, centerfieldsmoke.com. And then another great one, which I actually thought could be the Steelers slogan for 2015, "No one stops us but us." And that's a perfect segue into the next topic that I want to talk with you about, Chris. And that's the Pittsburgh Steelers offense is reportedly, and this is not just a report, it's been said by Ben Roethlisberger, by Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator. The goal is 30 points a game on average. Remember, folks, how averages work. If you need to go back to middle school mathematics, if they score 27 in one game but 40 in the next, the average would be over 30, even though at one game they didn't reach the 30-point total. So do you think it's realistic, Chris? I mean, we all thought it going into 2015, and that was the same goal that they had last year. The only difference is that Ben Roethlisberger was hurt. I think if he stayed healthy, they probably would have done it last year. Without Martavis Bryant, we talked about him in the red zone, so to speak, and also Martavis Bryant not really being a big factor with the two-point conversion game. He was a big play threat, and you watch any highlight reel of 2015 Steelers, and you see a lot of number 10 running down the field with the football, and you're saying to yourself, we're going to miss that in 2016. What are your thoughts? Is it realistic, yes or no?
It's realistic. It very much is realistic, and if you let me explain why, I can tell you. It's to average 30 points a game over 16 games. Do your math. That's 480 points in a season. The Steelers last season scored 423 points, and that was with Michael Vick making what, three starts, Landry Jones making two starts, and both needing to fill in during other games. Ben Roethlisberger played maybe half the season in an amount of full games of the year. They did that, and they still scored 423 points in the season. If Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown the rest of the team, I'm not saying that if those three live and the rest of the team like just gets hurt, core nucleus of this offense remains healthy. I see no reason that not only they get to 480 points in average 30, I see no reason to not get 500 points. And there are only a select few, and it's actually growing now every year because of the offensive rules that have changed the NFL, but there's only 16 teams in the history of the NFL that have scored 500 points or more. Of those 16, 10 of them have reached the Super Bowl. Now, of those 10, only two have won the Super Bowl, but I think that that's a significant marker for the Steelers. I mean, the ultimate marker, of course, is always winning. You know, Mike Tomlin will tell you, I don't walk past six offensive titles. I walk past six Lombardis. It may sound corny, but when you said it to Willie Parker about rushing titles, it was the absolute truth. And because the goal is to win. But here's the thing with the Steelers offense, they can put up points in bunches so fast, hit you quick, even without Martavis Bryant. And Martavis Bryant stretched the field in an amazing way. But don't let that make you think that the team can't attack the deep ball without Martavis Bryant. Darius Heyward-Bey is a blazer. He can still get behind you. In many effects, Darius Heyward-Bey is kind of a Mike Wallace. He doesn't run the sharpest routes in the world. He's very fast. I wouldn't say he's as fast as Wallace is, but I think that over the years he's become a wily veteran, and the way Wallace was, I think his head is in a different place. Like, Mike Wallace knows that he can be a superstar in the league because he was one with Ben Roethlisberger for a while. I mean, I remember back in 2013 it was 2011 or 2012, people were comparing him to Calvin Johnson. I mean, that was the level of comparisons that people were making because of the numbers he was putting up with Ben Roethlisberger. Then he went to play with Ryan Tannehill, and he still put up 8 touchdowns a year, but it wasn't nearly the same. And I think Darius Heyward-Bey has similar attributes to Wallace in that he doesn't go get the ball like Antonio Brown, and that's much like what Mike Wallace did, but he can catch the open pass, he can make the hard play, and he's really fast. You add that to a sharp route-running Marcus Wheaton, who's also got some wheels on him, and to the greatness that is Antonio Brown, and who knows, you might get a Sammy Coates that steps up, you know, and also stretches the field. You got big play factors in a lot of facets. And that still hasn't touched Le'Veon Bell or D'Angelo Williams or Darius Green or Jesse James. So You know, I'm looking at this offense. They can absolutely score 480, let alone 500. I guess I'd say it backwards. You know, they score 500, let alone the 480. But their offense is going to be lighting it up this year as long as they all stay healthy, which is a big if because it seems like every season we have this dark cloud above us. If Marquise Pouncey's not getting hurt, then Le'Veon Bell's getting hurt, or they're both getting hurt like they did last year. And then Ben Roethlisberger going down. I mean, do you know, Jeff, there was not one game where we had all of the entire year of Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown being on the same field at the same time. There wasn't one time last year. Think about that. And we still had an amazing offensive year. I mean, if the team's healthy, they're killing it.
Yeah, absolutely. You think about that simple fact, and you think back to 2014 and what Le'Veon Bell did before he had the knee injury at the end of the season, and you sit there and think, this team can be so much more dynamic. Now, D'Angelo Williams was great, and he played a phenomenal game in 2015. But fans need to remember, he is not Le'Veon Bell. Bell is the best all-around running back in the National Football League, period. You can talk about Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson cannot run routes like Le'Veon Bell. You can talk about LeSean McCoy. Right, exactly. You can talk about LeSean McCoy. LeSean McCoy does not have the receiving skills of Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell might not be the best running back in terms of running the football between the tackles, but he's darn well good enough that he can get the job done. And I think that this team, honestly, this offense, more importantly, is just on the brink of, in my opinion, being not only maybe the best Steelers offense in team history, but possibly one of the best offenses in NFL history. And that's really, really brash to say. I understand that. And I know a lot of fans might listen to this big name, what a homer. I'm a homer. Chris, you're a homer. But at the same time,
yep.
I think that's a little bit of the truth. You agree?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, one, I'm a homer, so I have to agree with you. But as far as the team being – you know, able to put up, you know, like I said, they put up 423 points last year, and Ben Roethlisberger missed half the season. And that was with Le'Veon Bell only playing in five games and, you know, the team being out of sync and them down to their fourth-string quarterback at times. You know, you consider – and missing Marquise Pouncey, an all-pro center that was supposed to conduct the offensive line that also had a great season without its superstar. You know, you put all that on the field – and let them gel for – oh, my gosh. I mean, it's a nightmare. It seems so long ago because it's been 2 years. But when Le'Veon Bell was in for a full season back in 2015 until that week 17 injury, I mean, he was too frightening. Ben would be in third and sixth, you know, if the defense happened to cover everyone that was a wide receiver. But Le'Veon Bell would just be like, hey, I'm turning from a blocker to a receiver. And Ben would dump it to him, and he would shake three guys, get 20 yards. And the Steelers are still moving the ball. And, you know, there's so many ways that this offense can hit you and that they will hit you, and that's why I'm very confident that so long as they stay healthy, this offense is going to be one of the best. You know, they've had the greatest show on turf. This is literally going to be the greatest show on earth because they're going to be able to rock Heinz Field, rock anyone that they face. They're going to be carving up the NFC East, so I think that they will be able to put up huge numbers again. You know, I think they got to face the Patriots again this year. I think that's going to be an exciting matchup. There's going to be a lot of really good things that we're going to see if they're healthy. And Le'Veon Bell, you know, Jeremy Fowler on ESPN, he reported maybe like a month ago saying that, Le'Veon Bell, we're not sure if he'll ever get back to what he was. If you watch these workout videos with Le'Veon Bell, dude is ready. He may not be where he was 2 years ago when he was leading the league in rushing, but he's definitely in a place where he's ready to get back to work and dominate the field. So I'm super excited. I think that they can be the best in the world, and they can also be one of the best of all time. And I'm putting them up there with Antonio Brown. He's going to be put up there with the greatest receivers of all time. Le'Veon Bell, he's going to be put up there with the Marshall Faulk and the Curtis Martins and you know, those caliber plays. And then you still got Ben Roethlisberger, who is the 21st best player in the league, if you didn't know, Jeff.
Yeah, no, I remember that conversation, unfortunately. It's one of these situations where I think maybe one of the biggest issues they might have, and it's hardly an issue, is there enough footballs to go around? You know, let's be honest. I mean, it's going to be difficult to get Antonio Brown 2,000 yards, which everyone seems to be talking about right now, to get Le'Veon Bell the touches where he would be getting almost 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving, not to mention other players that they want to get into the fold, the Darius Green. And you even talk about Marcus Wheaton and Darius Heyward-Bey and Sammy Coates and D'Angelo Williams in certain instances. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be really difficult. But if the Steelers can spread the ball around, if I have to rely on a team to spread the ball around, it's going to be them. And I think one thing that people forget, because Ben Roethlisberger was injured a lot last year, and I would bring up his stats right now, but I'm having some technical issues right currently. He did not play his best year in 2015. When he was on the field, obviously, at the beginning of the season, he played well. He was very on time. I just think back to that St. Louis game, now obviously L.A., but at the time they were still in St. Louis. And, boy, I remember them just moving up and down the field, just on that defense at will. They had to settle for field goals in that first half, and then obviously he goes down with a knee injury, and that kind of derailed him for a long time until he was able to get back into his rhythm. I think most would agree that it was probably that Seattle game that he was able to kind of find his groove, so to speak, and get back in the rhythm. But do you agree with that? He threw a lot of interceptions last year. He made a lot of bad decisions. I think he can be better. I think that's what I'm trying to say, is that I think Ben Roethlisberger could be better. And if that's the case, then the offense is just going to be better overall. Did you see that as well, or am I just being crazy?
No, you're not being crazy at all. I hold Ben to a high standard because I expect a lot out of him. And when he has a year, you know, as good as – they put up 423 points, like I said, but Ben Roethlisberger threw 21 touchdowns and 16 interceptions. That is a very – that's an old-school Ben Roethlisberger. Like, back when he was throwing, you know, like 17 touchdowns and 9 interceptions back when they won Super Bowl 40, or when they won Super Bowl 43 when he threw 17 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. You know, those aren't, you know, the superstar numbers that you want to see. And maybe that's why he's ranked at 21, is because that he didn't have a superstar, you know, stat season. But look at the year – look at 2014 when the offense was just starting to find its groove again. He threw 32 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. I'm pretty sure, you know, he almost doubled the amount of interceptions that he had. But I'm pretty sure a lot of that was because he was forcing to try to get back to the place where – the offense is, because I mean, he knows he's the man. He's supposed to be the sheriff. He's supposed to be the guy that gets everything done, and sometimes he forces them into play. And that's something that we're going to cover. We have a series coming up. It's going to be a long series. If you're a Behind the Steel Curtain fan, you like to read our stuff, or if you don't, you should check us out and know what you've been doing if you're not reading us all the time. with our film room series that I work on, we're going to have what's called the Path to 500 series. It's going to be like a 10-part saga of just discussing different aspects of this offense and why I think they can score 500 points in 2016. And part of that is going to be Ben Roethlisberger not making some of the boneheaded mistakes that he made last year. There were just some throws. It's just like you could see he was just trying to force it in there because he felt like he needed to do these things because he had been on the bench for so long. And they were offense right after coming off an injury. You know, he made less of these mistakes when he was fresh, you know, but most of his mistakes came when he was coming off injury, when I think that he felt like he owed his team something because he hadn't been on the field, and he just threw, you know, a really ill-advised pass or something just slipped out of his hand. And that's why he threw 16 interceptions in 11 starts. I mean, that's not a good year statistically-wise, but when you also throw in the fact that, you know, he led the offense in a serious – in a serious spurt, you know, they got them as one of the best in the league, and, you know, they were still missing Le'Veon Bell and Marcus Pouncey and Kelvin Beachum and all these other guys, you know, then you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, that's still pretty good. I hold Ben Roethlisberger to a high standard. He did not have one of his best years last year, but that I think that also inspires him to say, like, you know, I need to get in the film room, I need to get here, because Ben Roethlisberger's biggest weakness, and you can address this yourself, Jeff, because this might just be me, but I've always felt that his lack of looking prepared, like his lack of pre-snap reads and being able to just take what the defense gave him. Back when he was younger, and even recently, there were several times that the defense would line up, they'd put a lot of players in the box, or they'd show blitz, and Ben wouldn't be able to see something coming. and he would just let them come after him, and it just became a sort of a free-for-all, and you're sitting there like, Ben, you know, why didn't you react to that? And, you know, that used to be a bigger problem, and he used to be able to negate that in many situations because he was such an amazing athlete. He would take on a blitzer, shrug off Terrell Suggs and throw a touchdown and stuff like that. But over time, it's like you can't keep relying on that, and that kind of stuff gets you hit more, and that kind of stuff gets you hurt. So now I think that one thing he's done a lot better of, he sees what the defense gives him, and not in the sense that, oh, I can just test you deep. It's like, no, I'm going to pick you apart. You want to leave Heath Miller right there? Okay, we're going to do this. Okay, we're going to do this. And now he has a command of the offense, and that's something that I think that the Steelers absolutely need him to be more consistent with this year, is saying, hey, I can see where we got to go, and I'm taking us there. What do you think?
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And I think, and people, it's not so much anymore, but you remember what it was like when Todd Haley was brought in and Bruce Arians was let go. Everyone was pissed about it. And especially in that first year when it just didn't look right. He is, each year, his under Haley has gotten better in terms of completion percentage to the point that he had a career high last year at 68%. You float around 70% completion. I mean, I don't care if you're throwing little bubble screens or not. You're doing something right. And if you're winning games and you're throwing for nearly 4,000 yards, only playing in 12 games, that's impressive. Okay, now, the interceptions that he threw, I agree with you. He was trying to force the ball. It seemed like sometimes, especially that Cincinnati game at home, wearing the Bumblebees, just coming off the knee injury. He didn't trust the knee. I don't think he trusted himself that much, and that definitely showed. And I think, though, that you see, under Haley, he's learning how to read the defense better. And ultimately, what I think is the most impressive, and you mentioned this, take what the defense gives you, okay?
Yep.
If you want to put a linebacker on Le'Veon Bell, who's out split and wide, that's fine. There might be a receiver that could be open 3 seconds later if I hold onto the ball, but if I get it to Le'Veon Bell right away, he's going to make a miss. He's going to gain 25 yards. We're going to move the chains. I'm going to stay healthy, and ultimately the team's going to be better off. Now, I understand that last year that didn't happen in terms of his health. It also didn't help that the guys rolled up on his legs and were stepping on his feet. Some of those are just fluke and happenstance. But still, I look at Roethlisberger's statistics. A couple things pop out to me. Number one is the completion percentage. I think it's him leading the defense. It's him with Todd Haley. It's working. And I also see that he always seems to bounce back after a double-digit interception year. Now, he used to have double-digit interceptions like it was his job. Okay, but all of a sudden in 2010, after 12 interceptions in 2009, he only threw 5. In 2011, he threw 14, followed it up in 2012 with 8. 2013, he threw 14. 2014, he threw 9. That was when he had 32 touchdowns and only 9 interceptions. 2015, he threw 16. If you ask me, he's going to be back to that. He follows trends like this. It's uncanny when you look back into his game logs and his statistics and how it just seems to always kind of flow. I expect him to bounce back, and I think he could actually have 70% completion. I think he could throw for 5,000 yards. I think his average could be higher than 8.4, what it was last year. And I think that his QBR, which was at its highest in 2015 at 76.9, could be even better. Now, his quarterback rating was not his highest. His highest quarterback rating ever was 104.1 and 07. I think he could probably be around that. He was 94.5 last year. There is still room for improvement by number 7. And a lot of fans are going to hate saying that. There's certain players in Pittsburgh that you just can't criticize, and Roethlisberger is one of them. I'm not necessarily criticizing him. I guess I'm just saying that ultimately there is room for improvement. And when you talk about that, you see that the ceiling has not yet been reached yet by this offense. And as much as we are applauding the offense and talking about how great they can be, it can still be better. And that is scary. That's ultimately scary when you ask me. But I don't know, Chris, do you have anything to spout off about before we're kind of running out of time here? What are your final thoughts here as we wind down the show? It's been a very offensive-oriented show. I like that. I like that. I like an offensive guy.
Same here. I like some offense, and I think that we've done a lot of talking about the defense stuff to kind of cover our bases. But I want to bring up something else about the offense. That old news, but it's regurgitated news, and that has been brought up a lot this week and will be probably brought up again this summer. The guy that caught him in the place, Bruce Arians, he's the former offensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers, now the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. He was interviewed by HBO because the Arizona Cardinals are going to be the subject of their Hard Knocks series this summer in training camp. And in the interview with HBO, it was sort of revealed before the show was going to be released this summer that the awkwardness, that his wife blames, and I guess he somewhat blames Mike Tomlin for the way that he was treated in Pittsburgh and how he just was not re-signed. And he took that as being fired. He's just like, Mike Tomlin told him, and this is not anything new. If you were following the Steelers closely back when they made the change, I think that was after 2011 or 2012 when Todd Haley came in. If you were following the Steelers around then, you heard this news then too. But Mike Tomlin was ready to keep Bruce Arians on board. He wanted him there because he was one of his boys. He was one of Ben Roethlisberger's boys. He was very much part of the Steelers family. But that wasn't good enough. And he said that, after he talked to the guys above him, which you can only assume was Kevin Colbert and the Rooney, and he was told, there's nothing I can do, man. And he said, I couldn't get you your money. And and Bruce Arians was hurt by that. And Bruce Arians' wife came out and made like a scolding comment sort of about Tomlin, saying, we thought he was our friend and, he showed his true colors or something along that effect. And my response to that, a lot of people are like, oh, well, Mike Tomlin's not who you think he is. My response to that is, Mike Tomlin doesn't call all the shots in the Steelers organizations. He's not like Joe Paterno was for the Penn State Nittany Lions. He's not Bill Belichick for the New England Patriots. I don't even think Bill Belichick calls all the shots because Bob Kraft is over there, but he's not Chuck Knoll, who, I think commanded a lot more respect, but he hasn't built himself up to be that just yet. Now he's extremely highly respected, but I think that when it comes to respect of his own players, no coach has more of that. But as far as in the organization, I don't think Mike Tomlin gets to call those shots yet because he hasn't been around long enough. I mean, he's still one of the youngest coaches in the NFL. Despite him having two Super Bowl appearances and one victory. A lot of people wanted to make stuff out to be like that. But this is old news. We've talked about this before. People like to dig up stories. So if you hear about this story, check it out if you want to learn more about it, if you want to see the interview. But don't react to it like this is some big deal. I think Mark Cabola did a good job on Twitter when it was first coming out. He's like, isn't this something we talked about like 4 years ago? And, if you remember – there's always some sort of news trying to be kicked up about the Steelers. And, everyone always says about the team, but literally it's a serious problem because if you remember when this first happened, Ben Roethlisberger and Todd Haley, they crossed each other in the hallway and didn't say anything. That's a problem. Jeff, did you hear that? It was that kind of crazy for a bit. And then they said that Ben Roethlisberger didn't want to work with Todd Haley and that he was pissed because Bruce Arians was fired and he never wanted to work with them again. That Ian Rappaport said that Ben Roethlisberger wanted to be traded. And, there's so many things that they've tried to heap upon this organization and say that this is true, this is true. And it's all just speculation from reporters who claim to have inside connections with the teams and, that someone with the team told them this. And it's like, well, who told you that, Ian Rappaport? Because – he's the one that seems to report all these things, and then it seems like they're all cool. And if you ever watch them at training camp, if you ever get a chance to go out to St. Vincent's College to sit out there and enjoy, a nice summer day and watch the team, they're hanging out. Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger, they're boys now. They might not have been at first, but they grew into it. Every professional relationship, they kind of need that time to sizzle. And they've marinated to the point where I think that they really work well together. Anyone that tries to insinuate that this team has a big rift in it because of that thing that happened 4 years ago, it is crazy. And I think the Steelers, they have nothing but respect for Bruce Arians. They like the guy. They tried to make it a big topic when he came to Pittsburgh with the Cardinals midseason, because the Cardinals, they were one of the better teams in the NFL, and they were coming up to a hurt Pittsburgh team, and Pittsburgh was able to beat them with Michael Vick and Landry Jones. If you hear that story, don't think much of it. If you heard the story about Le'Veon Bell, failing or missing a drug test, and that has been so far shown to be just a complete rumor started by someone who wanted to get on, you know, create news for their website or whatever. You know, if you hear that kind of stuff, don't worry about it. If you see it on Behind the Steel Curtain, then you worry about it because we report the real stuff.
Absolutely. You kind of stole what I was going to say in my teed off segment. You did a good job with it.
My bad.
It's okay, man. That's okay. You have your chance too. When I saw that Bruce Arians was being brought up again, and I saw on Twitter, like, what is it going to take for this narrative to be taken out into the field and put out of its misery, you know, like old Yeller? I mean, I'm so sick and tired of hearing about Bruce Arians. And here's the thing. If Bruce Arians is truly happy in Arizona, and as much as he says he is, and everyone talks about how cool he is, and he wears those stupid hats and blah, 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 you know, that garbage that is always thrown at us every Sunday during the season, why is he still talking about Pittsburgh? Like, why is that?
Yep.
When Andrea Kramer says, when he left Pittsburgh, why isn't he saying, you know what, Andrea, I appreciate that question, but you know what, it's been so long. I'm so far beyond that now. I'm with the Arizona Cardinals. I'm happy here. I love the team. I enjoyed my time in Pittsburgh, but this is where I am. It's what I want to talk about. That's the answer you want to hear. Why is he still talking about this? Shut up. Just shut your mouth. I mean, goodness gracious. Why in the hell are they interviewing his wife? Who cares what his wife has to think? It's in a football show. I mean, give me a break. I seriously was like, this is unbelievable. They're just digging up these bones all over again. And I guarantee that the people, you know, and then, of course, Andrea Kramer posted, she reached out for comment for the Pittsburgh Steelers on all this, the fact that the rumor he supposedly did not fire Arians. It was more Tomlin's call. And the Steelers simply said, but we're not commenting on this. And rightfully so, you shouldn't have to. This is ridiculous. But in the words of you know, A.J. Burnett, when he pitched for the Pittsburgh Pirates, I can't say it on air, but it's STFU, Bruce Arians. You know what that means if you call the Pirates or if you're on Twitter. Just STFU. That's what I want to say to those people, all right? And if you're following that story thinking, oh, my gosh, Pittsburgh Steelers, here we go, then really you need to look at the grand scheme of things. It's fine. Things are fine. I do not want Bruce Arians back. If you do, you have been blind and you haven't listened to any games because you hear the fact that the Steelers' offense is brimming with talent and ready to break out in 2016. So that's my thoughts. Just listen to A.J. Burnett. This is what he has to say, and we can direct that towards Bruce Arians. That would be great. But it's the dead season, my friend. Actually, we have a caller. Let's get this caller on the air. I think I have an idea who this is. Let's see here. My computer will work. There we go. 347-406-7201. And I'm with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead.
What's up, fellas? It's Bryce calling from Brooklyn.
What's up, Bryce? Thought it was you.
What's going on, fellas? What's going on? Yo, Jeff, I just had to piggyback off of what you said. Why are we listening to what Bruce Arians has to say about this? Like, you know what's funny about Bruce is, first of all, he's somewhat disingenuous. Bruce, you got let go because you kept getting the franchise quarterback sacked. Now, I know your offensive lines, they weren't great, and I totally understand that. But you didn't help your offensive line that much by coming up with schemes where they could just fire off and just play as physical as they can, nothing fancy, 5 or 6 runs, get downhill, particularly with a back like Mendenhall. You kept wanting to run lead powers to the right and be predictable in the run game, and you didn't run the football efficiently. So when the owner says, we need to run the football more efficiently, the best part of the offseason, one of them, is when Art Rooney gave some of the most basic comments you can hear, and they're always, always true. They've never been not true when he assesses the team. They said, Bruce, we're getting the quarterback sacked too much, and we're not running the football efficiently enough. And that was hindering them from starting to win. And guess what? He didn't care because he wanted to run his offense 5 wide, spread them out. So they let you go, and they brought in a guy that fulfilled that mandate. And in the end of 2012, Todd Haley, his offense wasn't great. They didn't have the same amount of talent. So they went end of 2012, beginning of 2013, struggling. And then guess what? The no-huddle cut fire in 2013, and that offense has been off to the races with some starts and stops, and they've had their issues. But it's been much better. Ben has been a much better quarterback. And Bruce's team still have the same problems. Great on the perimeter, run up and down the field, can't be physical when it matters to win big games. And that's what the Cardinals are going to be. because that's the makeup of the team. They're built more on the perimeter than they are to smack you in the mouth and beat you that way, because that's how Bruce likes to play football. So to hear him talk is just ridiculous. He's being very disingenuous.
Go ahead, Chris.
Now, I see you getting your Stephen A. Smith on. It's just ridiculous. it really is ridiculous. I mean, when you're talking about Bruce Arians, it's like, come on, man. This is so old. Why are you digging this up? I mean, if he really has a bone with the Steelers, that's kind of sad, because not only did you get another gig immediately with the Indianapolis Colts, and then he made into a star because the head coach got cancer and you led that team to a playoff run in the middle of his chemotherapy, but then you got a head coaching job with a team that had a lot of young talent on it, that had a really good core with it, and you've been able to take that team to an NFC Championship game. Come on, man. Like, when you had the mad about Pittsburgh never treated him wrong.
Yeah, and Jeff, they're not – like, if you look at the Cardinals, I know they'll hit you, but overall it's not a physical team. Look at what Pittsburgh did to them with those injuries when they came to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh outlasted them because that's Bruce's teams. He wants to go up and down the field. They play more perimeter-style football. That was the problem, like, in 2008, and they were able to overcome it because they did have a lot of talent, and they had the quarterback that had the magic. But the defense was the physical part of that team. Pittsburgh had physicality in spurts. Towards the end, when Parker ran the football in San Diego, against San Diego and all that, they had some of that, but they couldn't do it consistently because Bruce, he doesn't like to play that way. He wants to get it in chunks, run up and down the field, can't score enough in the red zone consistently, can't be physical in the run game consistently in the red zone. That's Arizona's problem, and that's why they couldn't beat us, and that's why they're not going to win a Super Bowl.
Well, and you can see Bruce Arians in his prime, in his glory, so to speak, and I say that loosely because in the playoffs, you saw them get absolutely annihilated. You said, his teams are not mentally and physically tough. You saw how fragile sometimes the Steelers' offense was when he was in Pittsburgh. Now, also, when you have a Carson Palmer throwing the football and not a Ben Roethlisberger, you started seeing those Bengal stripes through that white helmet of the Arizona Cardinals. It was Carson Palmer. You don't have the luxury of just relaxing and saying, you know what, Ben's going to be Ben. He's going to make a play. You say
right.
Carson Palmer, that means he's going to be throwing three interceptions probably in the first half. So, ultimately, I know that it sucked at the time, and a lot of people were upset. This is a move that benefits the Steelers. Them letting him go, I don't care if it was Art Rooney II. I don't care if it was Kevin Colbert. I don't care if it was Mike Tomlin. Hell, I don't care if it was the water boy that told him he was gone. He leaving benefits the Steelers and is benefiting the Steelers to this day, so fans should be happy for that.
Look at the Steeler offense in the beginning of 2012. You know what I noticed about that offense? Time of possession. They were so much better on third down than they were in 2011. It wasn't even funny. Now, maybe you can credit that to Ben having another year, but I credit that to Todd Haley starting to implement his scheme, which was possess the football, get first downs. You don't have to get it in chunks every play. It's kind of funny to see them now, where now Todd is doing more of the, hey, we'll get it in chunks on third and one. We'll be aggressive. We'll do that. And I think they need to make sure they're keeping an eye on that and not lose efficiency. But if you look at that 2012 offense, even when it sputtered down the stretch because of the talent, it was still much better in terms of efficiency in the beginning of the year because they had a different philosophy, and it's benefited the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know Chris will echo the sentiment, but when you have teams that can move the ball down the field with efficiency and equate drives and touchdowns, now that's something the Steelers can still improve on. It wasn't like Bruce Arians with red zone juggernaut. But if they can improve their red zone offense, this team's going to be unbeatable because no one's going to be able to score with them. It's a possession game. It's protecting the football. And there are still aspects of Pittsburgh's offense that can improve in 2016, but unbelievably less issues than if Bruce Arians were here still calling the plays. But he said at the beginning, Bryce, I don't understand why he's still even talking about the Steelers. I mean, if you're so happy, then why are you still talking about an offensive coordinator job? You're a head coach now. You should be ridiculously excited. I don't get it at all. Chris, what do you think?
Like I've said it before, I don't get why he's upset. I think maybe because it may be a pride thing in the sense that Bruce Arians is seeing Ben Roethlisberger light it up, and he's seeing, like, the guy that he really saw a lot out of. And this I would sympathize with. He wishes that he was with him on this journey because he feels like, man, the Steelers are about to win the Super Bowl soon, and I wish I could be a part of that journey. And that, I do get sour grapes, but he's a professional. He needs to get over that and sort of been like, hey, man, you know, I wish nothing but the best for y'all, and, you know, I'm going to do my best to kick your butt when I'm on the field, but, you know, other than that, you know, go ahead, do y'all thing. And it's professional sports. He needs to get past it, at least in my opinion.
Well, guys, I'll give you both an answer, and it's going to be a little tongue-in-cheek, but you know why he had to say it? Because it's a very Uncle Brucey thing to do. And that's really, truly the answer to me, which is Bruce Arians has prided himself on always on being this quirky uncle-type guy that'll kind of say what's on his mind and wear the Kangols. He's the cool dude, so I'm gonna just tell you like it is. Boom, boom, boom. So he wouldn't be Uncle Brucey if he didn't say that. But part of that reality is Uncle Brucey, who I do respect. I respect Bruce. I think he's a great coach, and what he's gone through as a person, you have to respect that. But if you look at the facts of the situation, your offense gave up too many sacks with a franchise $150 million quarterback, and you didn't run the football efficiently enough. And for them to go to the next level with the quarterback, you had to go because they needed a coordinator that was going to instill that into the team. Look at this. Here's one great stat I love about Ben. 2012-13, the teams were very average, not good Steeler teams. He threw 28 touchdowns in the red zone and no picks. That's part of Haley's influence. That's part of him knowing where to go with the football in tighter windows, running a more efficient offense. They were not that efficient in the Bruce Arians era.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I say I agree. The red zone was a big problem for the Steelers then. It's still a problem now, but not nearly as much. And part of it was because I think Arians was cool with letting Roethlisberger work within himself in those systems, and Haley's kind of pushed him to this next level. So I agree
yes.
entirely. I like the movement. I like the coordinator. I like the new coordinator.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I understand why his wife defended him. I mean, that's what a wife is supposed to do. I have no issue with that, you know. So, I mean, I get that, but you're right. It's like, what do they expect her to say? She's going to say that.
Right. I agree. Well, Bryce, we got to let you go because we have another caller we want to bring on the air. We always thank you for calling in, though. We appreciate your contributions to the show. We hope that you'll listen to us next week.
Thanks, guys. Love the show. Take care.
Yeah.
All right. So that was Bryce from Brooklyn, ladies and gentlemen. Our next guest calling in from Atlanta, we have Naj on the air with us now. Naj, what would you like to talk about?
Well, you guys are Steelers fans. It's Steelers show, so we can talk Steelers. No problem with that. And that Arians thing is interesting. I hadn't even heard of that. But, yeah, that sounds like something he would say. And to be honest, that's kind of what stopped him from getting jobs, you know, in the past, that he's a real, you know, old school football type of guy, a kind of players type of guy, but not the most polished management, you know, warning type of guy. It is what it is. You guys still respect him as a coach, even though he's gone. So that kind of lets you know, because fan bases really don't do that much. So, you know, that's an interesting thing, though. But I like Bruce, like Tomlin. Like you guys said, Haley's done a good job with Ben. I don't know if anybody on earth likes him, but he's clearly good at his job.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, I totally agree, because Arians is a guy that when he was here, like, people liked him at first because in 2007, Ben lit it up. And it was the first year that you really saw Ben start to light it up statistically. Now, he still wasn't consistent enough to the degree that a lot of people wanted him, including myself, but you saw him start to improve. And in 2008, they won the Super Bowl. 2009, he had that 5-touchdown game against the Packers. And in 2010, they were one drive away from winning another Super Bowl. So, like, there was definitely a lot to like about Arians, and people respected him for that. But at the same time, a lot of people, especially after 2011, when they saw way too many wide receiver screens and way too many failures in the red zone, they're like, okay, it's about time that we tried something else. And I think that there was a sense of relief when the Steelers didn't resign him and they went after a head coach that had brought some innovative offense to Kansas City in Todd Haley. In Pittsburgh, generally, unless you're Yammer Yager, we don't hate you when you leave. You know, you got to do some real funky stuff to make Pittsburgh not like you if you're a former player. I mean, Neil Walker, I don't know if you follow baseball at all, but he was the Pirates' second baseman for many years here. And he was born and raised in Pittsburgh. He was a superstar for Pine Ridge High School. I mean, and he was the talk of the town at all times. I still see Neil Walker jerseys every day. But he wanted the money, and the Pirates had to trade him to the New York Mets. And he came back recently and kicked our butts. But when he kicked our butts in our own stadium, we clapped for him because it was like, hey, Neil, you know, we understand you're doing your thing. You know, there's not a whole lot of jersey burning that goes on here. And I think the same thing goes for Bruce Arians. The only way that would happen is if he came out and was like, I spit on Pittsburgh or I spit on Mike Tomlin or Ben Roethlisberger and stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's just traditional Pittsburghism. But, Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to say that Bruce Arians isn't a good coach. The man's won Coach of the Year, I think, maybe the last two seasons. He's good at the players like him. They don't mind playing for him. He's a player's coach, but he does it the right way. I just don't like how this narrative with him in Pittsburgh is just not going away when it should be done and gone. He's got a great team in Arizona. He's in a great spot in Arizona in terms of the team that he has. I just don't understand why everyone wants to come back to the Steelers, which was not even his last stop, like you mentioned, Chris. He went to the Colts, and he was the assistant there, and obviously he took over when Chuck Pagano got sick, and then that got him to Arizona. I just don't understand why it's always going back to Pittsburgh, and maybe it's because it's just the Steelers. It just doesn't make sense to me, not at all. But do you have any other questions about the Steelers or anything like that, Nosh?
Well, I guess I would ask, what are you guys looking forward to this year? How close do you guys think you were to pulling it off last year despite all of the injuries going into the playoffs? When I was talking with a lot of people, I kept saying nobody wants Pittsburgh. This is the most dangerous team coming into this playoff. And, you know, just watching them out there, it seemed like that proved to be true. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Well, I'll be as bold as ever and say that they were a fumble away from going to the AFC Championship game. I mean, if Fitzgerald Toussaint doesn't fumble that football in the red zone against the Denver Broncos, I don't think that the Denver Broncos have a full field drive in them to win that football game, especially one that had to result in a touchdown. Peyton Manning was horrible in that game. No passes were accurate. Everything was wobbly. It just turned out that the Pittsburgh Steelers turned the ball over at the absolute wrong time. Now, everyone wants to debate whether the Steelers would have beaten New England in New England. We all know their track record there, but in terms of how close were they were a fumble away from being a step away from Super Bowl 50, and the way that offense was playing, you figure not Le'Veon Bell, but Antonio Brown would have been back for that AFC Championship game coming off of the concussion. There's a strong likelihood that he would have been back. D'Angelo Williams could have been back after his foot injury had it happened in Week 17. Chris, are you going to go as far as saying that they could have been in the Super Bowl and the AFC representative in Super Bowl 50?
I mean, they could have. I personally, after we escaped the Bengals with the way that, I mean, with Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, limping back onto the field. Now, Jeff and I instant message each other via Google during every game, and we're like chatting, just sharing thoughts. And when Ben Roethlisberger, like, limped his way back on the field against the Bengals, I was just like, oh, my God, this is about to happen. And I just kept saying, come on, Ben, come on, Ben. And when we got through that heart attack of a game and then did our post-game show, I just felt so emotionally drained. And I was like, that was the wildest ride I've had with the Steelers in a long time. And I was just, like, thinking, like, I don't – as a fan, I'm like, I can't expect much more of these guys. You know, you want to expect more, but it's like they were down to their fourth and fifth string running back. They never had Marquise Pounce. Ben Roethlisberger had been hurt all season for lower body injuries. Now his shoulder's injured. Now you're missing Antonio Brown. If they did manage to beat the Broncos, it's like I can't even ask you guys to do much more because you're beating top teams in the league without any of your superstars. At the beginning of the season, the story was Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, and Martavis Bryant. At that point of the season against the Broncos, they hadn't had Bell for weeks. They didn't even have Bell's backup in the game. They didn't have Antonio Brown. And, you know, they had Sammy Coates was getting PC. Fitzgerald Toussaint and Jordan Todman, guys that they signed during the season, were getting plays at running back and looking good. you know, I was to the point where I could have, if at that point I was proud after that, after the, even though they fumbled that game, they fumbled the ball and they lost the Broncos, I was like, man, I'm okay. These are my dudes. They've always been my dudes. And there's, you know, nothing but holding your head up after that loss. But could they have beaten the Broncos? Absolutely. Could they have beaten the Patriots? I think it would have been a tall task, but I don't think it would have been outside of their range, because the way that the defense was flying all over the field, I think they could have caused some turnovers and stayed alive. And then you've got to ask the question about the Panthers. You know, what would have happened with that? So I think that they definitely have had a shot. You know, it would have been a really tall order. But I, you know, I'm just excited because I think this year, if they don't have all these injuries again, I'm liking their chances of getting a number one seed and being the team to beat across the NFL.
Yeah, and let me say something real quick, man, because what you just said kind of reminded me of something, and this is something we miss out, and it's the beauty of sports, because 24/7 sports media has hyped us up to think about legacies and championships, and that's it. But the unexpected, man, when you have those seasons mean a lot to you as a fan because they're so exciting. When Matt Ryan came to Atlanta as a rookie, we just expect, okay, rebuilding season, we're going to do this. But no, they brought in Michael Turner as a free agent. They ended up, you know, getting, I think it was a 2-seed in the playoffs that year. But it was totally unexpected. We were expecting a rebuild. We got to the playoffs and lost, but everybody was happy. It's not a Super Bowl season. But when you have that unexpected success where you've already said, okay, you know, I mean, this team is clearly, under the gun, whatever they do, you know, we'll be happy. But when they go out and exceed those expectations, man, that is a fun ride to have as a fan. And I remember that in Atlanta that year. And I think y'all had some of that with all of those injuries that you're talking about. You lose the best running back in football and still almost beat that Denver defense, that all-time Denver defense. Like, that's fun, man.
So just to clarify, you are a Falcons fan?
A converted Falcons fan. I moved down here, so after I was here a while, had to go ahead with the team, man. And if you're going to ask me if they're going to be good next year, no, they're not. Average at best. Look, this is the thing about the NFL. When the so-called franchise quarterbacks come up in the draft every year, you don't know if you're actually getting a franchise quarterback. We have Matt Ryan, who is dependent on what's around him. You guys have Big Ben, who's an actual franchise quarterback. And the difference between those two things is huge, as you've seen with Atlanta's past few seasons, where our talent's depleted and Matt can make up for it.
No, I totally hear you there. I only ask because one thing that we talked about earlier this week was how, and actually one of our partners' podcast with Steel City Underground talked about how Steeler Nation is there's no borders to it. I was going to ask you, do you ever see Steelers fans just hanging out in Atlanta?
Oh yeah. Whenever we play them, if you remember that infamous tie game back in the day with Vic, there's a whole there's a whole lot of Steelers fans that are down here in Atlanta. But sadly, this is Atlanta, so there's Yankees fans, Lakers fans, everything down here. You know, that's the kind of city it is, so, you know, that's just a part of it. But, you know, you guys travel well. It's always been the case, historic franchise. And the Falcons, you know, they seem to be on the way up, though. I do like the coach, and I do like how he's building the team now.
I appreciate that. Is there anything else you wanted to say before we let you go, Nosh?
Nah, man. Basketball's over. It's almost time for training camp. Football's coming. And I guess we can go ahead and have fun again. Besides that, hey, man, we just got to get through these couple of weeks. That's all. We all got to get through these weeks.
Yes, sir. Dog days of summer. We thank you very much, Nosh, for being on the show. Please call in. And, again, if anyone ever wants to call, the number is 347-850-8581. We love having people like Nosh calling from all parts of the country. We like Bryce to call in from Brooklyn. I mean, literally, we're having people from the north, people from the south. I mean, we've had guys from Ireland call into the show before. So we love having all different diverse thoughts from every part of the globe calling in to talk about football. Even if you're not a Steelers fan, just come to talk about what's going on in the NFL. We love to have you on. So, Jeff, we had a pretty interesting show tonight, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about the dog days of summer, a lot of times you're not sure if you're going to have topics to talk about. You're not sure if you're going to have callers. It seems like every time we have the show, we have a few callers that call and bring up some really good stuff.
We thank everyone for calling in. And, Chris, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the show. It's always appreciated.
Same here. I'm glad to be on the show with you. I'm sure we're going to have some exciting topics next week, so stay tuned. We also have some more BTSC shows lined up. Let's not forget our sponsors one more time. You got, if you're looking for a lawyer in Western Pennsylvania or Northern West Virginia, there's no better lawyer to call than Frank Walker. You can visit his firm at frankwalkerlaw.com. And you can also check out, if you want Pittsburgh sports gear, there's no better place to go than Centerfield Smoke, centerfieldsmoke.com. They have great hockey, baseball and football shirts to boost up your wardrobe, to top that smack, and that really just change up your style. So it's really cool stuff there. We have great sponsors. We have great shows. And stay tuned for BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. If you're not a subscriber, just go in. It's free. You can sign up for a user login, make comments with the community, and join all these longtime Steelers fans that just love to talk football. We talked about today, you know, we were talking about stuff from as far as how the Steelers convert two-point conversions to how intimidating old Jack Lambert was back in the 70s. So we have diverse conversations from all over, and you can always have your own conversation. So we're glad to have this show. I'm glad to be part of it, and I'm looking forward to next week, Jeff.
Amen, brother. That sounds good. I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you later.